Preface. If crimes were measured by the number of words said about them in podcasts or written about them online and in print, the trial of Erin Patterson would probably be the crime of the century. Yet the sheer volume of evidence presented over the course of a 9-week trial meant there was still so much detail unreported, and so much context surrounding that detail was missing, mainly because the order in which it was reported was the order in which it emerged at trial, not in the order in which it had happened in the lives of the participants. Erin began her trial as a woman presumed to be innocent. Whatever the average punter thought over a beer, wine, or cordial at the pub, the jurors at Erin's trial were firmly instructed that the presumption of innocence was the opening position in the eyes of the law. They could only find her guilty through paying careful attention to the evidence presented to them in the courtroom. No other stories, articles, anecdotes, or opinions counted. It was just the evidence. 21 days of pre-trial hearings had been held to decide what evidence would be admissible in a Supreme Court murder trial, and what evidence, for a whole host of reasons, would not. Based on only the admissible evidence, the jury had to be convinced that Erin had intended to kill, beyond reasonable doubt. It was far from easy. This book imagines the journey one of those jurors might have taken to reach their verdict. The story here is told to us by a fictional juror. I wanted readers to feel they were on that journey with the jury. I have not approached or spoken to any of the real jurors in the Erin Patterson trial. I have no idea who they are. None of this is based on any knowledge of the real jury room or their actual deliberations. But I know that the pressure those jurors were under, with the spotlight of global attention upon them, must have been immense. All the evidence our narrator discusses in the book comes directly from, and only from, the evidence those jurors heard and saw during the trial. Like all of us, our narrator has her own strengths, flaws, and opinions, and she does speculate. But where she does engage in speculation, it is clearly identified as separate from the evidence that leads to her verdict. And it reveals some surprising insights into police methodology along the way. For a jury to return a unanimous guilty verdict, all 12 jurors must believe the accused is guilty. But they do not have to agree on why they believe that person is guilty. The presiding judge will tell the jury this at the commencement of every jury trial. Each juror can reach their conclusion via a different path. This narrative uses a fictional juror to tell the story of just one of those paths.